And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. I do hope you're all very well indeed. We welcome you to Thursday's 9 to noon show. It's the 30th of October. It's just approaching 4 minutes past nine and you're very welcome along. We've a packed one for you today, as we always do over the next 3 hours, with the usual mix of good conversation, the very latest news and the stories behind the headlines, and your calls and comments as well, and the issues that are of importance to you. The lines are open for you right now, 086 60 25000. That's your WhatsApp and text number. That's your reaction line. But also, if you want to pass on any nuggets of information to us, or any issues in your area, or any good news or positivity that you want to spread across the Northwest and beyond, we're also loving your calls on 074 91 25000. And you can email, of course, comments at highlandradio.com. And we've got a lovely, loyal listenership that listen to the podcast and to our overnight replay. It's always great to have you on board, guys. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, email comments at highlandradio.com. We'll pick them up when we receive them and carry them into the next live show. Right, let's have a look at the papers. It's a Thursday, so you know yourself, there's lots of papers out this morning, including the Tyrconnell Tribune. In the aftermath of Friday's landslide victory for Catherine Connolly in the presidential election, it's emerged there are no planned votes being considered this week against Micheál Martin's leadership of Fianna Fáil. Such a possibility seems to have been put on ice until the report on the Jim Gavin debacle is published in the coming fortnight. However, the findings are unlikely to lead to a rebellion demanding heads to roll. This is now a waiting game, and while Martin is under pressure to justify his rationale for bypassing the parliamentary party in the choice of an election candidate, the rebels believe they have time on their side. However, the party is hearing from the grassroots that their leader's time is the leader's time in charge has come to an end sooner instead of later. However, he may not be for turning, with predictions the party has few options. Party sources said it does not have any alternative choice to lead them into the next general election. And of course, there's analysis of the weekend's vote in that paper as well. The Derry People Donegal News: concerns over dangerous driving in Falkara have reached new heights as residents claim the situation has become unbearable, with dangerous driving behaviour taking place nearly every weekend for the past 2 decades. The terrified residents spoke to the Donegal News about recent incidences outside their homes, including reckless driving, dangerous stunts like diffing and doing donuts on the national road, as well as the throwing of fireworks, which have led to growing fear locally. They described how groups of up to 10 cars or more gather in the car park of the National School on the main road going into town. They know all of this. I mean, it couldn't be too hard to police this, could it? For one resident whose home is less than 20 metres from where they regularly gather, the issue has been an ongoing nightmare. And you have to put yourself in that person's position. What must it be like? And it would be an absolute nightmare. But as I say, it's been going on for 2 decades. There seems to be some level of predictability. Why can't there be some sort of a targeted Garda operation to effectively get shot of it? It seems easy, but obviously it's not quite that easy, or it would have happened already. But I do sympathise greatly with those residents, not because I know what it feels like, but I can imagine what it must be like living in that environment. And there's no excuse for it either. The Derry News this morning: the T-shirt worn by independent councillor Gary Donnelly at a Derry City and Strabane District Council meeting is being investigated by the PSNI under the Terrorism Act 2000. Councillor Donnelly received a letter from the Forces Public Order Inquiry Team last week stating it had grounds to suspect he may have committed an offence contrary to Section 12 of the Terrorism Act. What is the T-shirt? The letter gave the grounds for suspicion of this offence contrary, and it goes into the actual act itself. Councillor Donnelly had been identified wearing a Palestine Action T-shirt. Palestine Action are a proscribed group. It's an awful waste of police time, all of that kind of stuff, isn't it? I mean, you know, I think to wear a T-shirt that depicts something is really quite I just don't understand the level of policing of, you know, clothes and words. There are people, obviously, who believe that, well, I mean, the British government has made Palestine Action. I'm not even saying that. I don't even know enough about them to say whether they're right, wrong, good or bad. right? But the idea that a law has been passed and someone wearing a T-shirt could be questioned because they support a certain group that a government has decided is wrong, it's bizarre. It feels bizarre in this day and age anyway. Like, you'd think we'd be moving a bit closer to the freedom of expression and stuff like that, but obviously not. And maybe I apologise if I'm missing something blatantly obvious there. Did you know that you have to file a property tax valuation? Because the clock is ticking, this is in the Irish Independent, for more than 1.5 million households that have to file a property tax valuation by midnight on Saturday. Homeowners are required to file a local property tax return for the following Saturday, indicating how they will pay the tax. More than 550,000 LPT returns have already been filed, with 27,000 returns filed on Bank Holiday Monday alone. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, I kind of did get some documentation in relation to this. I didn't really know I had to do anything, so I wonder, am I just really lazy or bad at bookkeeping, or am I typical of the 1.5 million households? Like, I just didn't read. What do they want me to do? How do I do it? I got a letter and I looked at it, and then I just thought it was taken out of my wages every week. So what do I have to do? And why haven't they made it clearer what I have to do? I suppose I'll have to do it. What happens if I don't do it? It's not that I don't want to do it, it's just I didn't know I had to. But anyway, this means only a quarter of liable property owners have filed a return so far. A surge in the value of homes since the last property tax valuation has triggered fears among households that their property tax bills will shoot up, a leading tax expert said. So we have to self-valuate. Is it? That's what we probably should have done something on the show about this, but as I say, I'm just being completely honest. I didn't know what I had to do. I think that money comes out of my wages. I'm not sure if I've switched bands. But anyway, that's just the facts. I will have to look into it, I suppose. The Irish Times, this is an important story. The number of women aged 20 to 49 being diagnosed with breast cancer increased by more than a quarter over a 10-year period, figures show. Now a charity is running a public awareness campaign urging women, particularly those outside of the screening age, to examine their breasts for abnormalities or changes. And as well as that too, I think, and this is not about fear or being scared, it's about awareness and knowledge. And I think it would be very easy to think that breast cancer only affects women over 50, because that's when you're sort of screened, isn't it? That's when the breast screening program kicks in there or thereabouts. But obviously, you know, these types of cancers can affect anyone at any age. So we can't just presume that age is some sort of a defense or a reason to let our guard down. And this is the same with testicular cancer in men or whatever, and cancers that affect both sexes. But the risk of developing breast cancer increases with age, with the disease most commonly being diagnosed in women aged 50 or older who have been through menopause, the HSE says. Data from the National Cancer Registry of Ireland showed there were 677 breast cancer diagnoses among women aged 20 to 49 in 2013, and this rose to 852 by 2022. That's a 26% increase. Now, maybe it is down to conversations we have in this show and other shows that talk about this, whereby people are more aware of their breast health and maybe get into a habit of checking. You know, we shower on a regular basis. Isn't that a good time to check so that you understand your body and then you can check for any abnormalities? So I'm not sure if that points to an increase in instances of cancer in that age group or more awareness. It's normally, the answer, a mixture of both. But no harm, just as a reminder, because you can be really ahead of these things and on top of these things too, if you know yourself. And then you know if anything changes. The Irish Daily Mail, this is not something I had considered, and that is the role of a female pandemic in saving lives and what they go through. Now, obviously, we're well aware of the high level, unfortunately, of verbal and physical abuse, but I didn't realise there was such a high level of groping and that manner of thing. Female paramedics have been subjected They've actually left a word out in the first sentence of the front page of a national newspaper, which I find remarkable. But female paramedics have been subjected to a litany of sexual harassment incidences and a culture of misogyny, a secret report obtained by the Irish Daily Mail reveals. The survey was carried out by female paramedics in the National Ambulance Service in the northeast of the country, prompted by the behaviour of several men working in the region over a number of years. I'll go to page four. It also followed the start of a criminal investigation into a male paramedic who's been accused of sexually assaulting a patient in his care. Those behind the study told the Mail it provides a snapshot of what is happening across the organisation. The survey was completed by 86% of female paramedics working in the region and showed that 50% reported experiencing some form of sexual harassment. These ranged from inappropriate comments to unwanted groping and sexual assault at the hands of patients and colleagues who often held senior positions. One paramedic said she had been sexually assaulted and had unwanted comments made about her body. Is this something that you have any experience of? I certainly hope it's not. But if it's something that is pulling the curtain back on a problem, 086 60 25,000, let us know more details. The Farmers Journal this morning: nitrates plan demands extra slurry storage. Dairy farmers will have to significantly ramp up their on-farm slurry storage capacity under proposals in Ireland's latest draft nitrate actives programme. A 100-cow dairy farmer meeting the current slurry shortage rules would be required to spend around €21,000 to upgrade their facility to the new standard. The draft proposes a 21% increase in slurry storage to be in place by October 28 on dairy farms, mostly down the country, I think. It's funny looking at the top 10 highest paid earners in RTE. It was sort of out yesterday, but covered more extensively today. And, you know, there was a time whereby the top 10 was all presenters, right? And you think, oh, God, they're not worth that. Bish, bash, bosh and all that kind of stuff. Well, it turns out, like, they're not as much presenters now, but they're staff. And a lot of the staff that you'd be familiar with from some of those public account committee meetings. So the big earners now are actually behind the scenes and on really good money. RTE stars Joe Duffy and Claire Byrne were its highest paid presenters last year, as some senior executives reined in more than most on-air talent. Of course, Claire Byrne is moving to News Talk if she hasn't already. Joe Duffy is retired, so that's going to change. After it was rocked by a payment scandal in 23, which saw Ryan Tuberty leave the station, has promised to be more transparent. However, new rules around contractors declaring payments made outside of the broadcaster have led to their biggest stars leaving. In its annual report yesterday, RTE revealed former Lifeline and host Joe Duffy being the highest paid presenter with a salary of $351,000. He quit earlier this year, with Claire Byrne the second highest paid star at the broadcaster with €280,000 of a salary, also announcing a shock departure to News Talk. The Late Late Show host Patrick Kilty came in third with a salary of $257,000. However, gone are the days when talent were the highest paid employees within RTE, as over the past year, Brian Dobson, Mary Wilson and Ray Darcy have all left. Director General Kevin Backhurst is the second highest paid employee overall after Joe Duffy, with a salary of, this is Kevin Backhurst, who was brought in to clean up RTE, his annual salary, €340,000. Rounded out the top five overall, Deputy Director General Adrian Lynch, so he's a Deputy Director General, $219,000 a year. Richard Waghorn's on $287,000, and Managing Director of News and Current Affairs, Deirdre McCarthy, is on $281,000. Now I'm the head of news here, and I think I'm kind of doing that for free. But anyway, down at RTE, effectively, down at RTE, $281,000 for being the head of news and current affairs. Isn't that remarkable? How many license fees does it take just to pay the wages of those that are not even on the telly or on the radio? That's unbelievable stuff. But anyway, it's so big, you can't get your head around it, can you? And finally, if you travel around the country or hit the tolls on the roads that have tolls, of course, you're going to be facing more of an outlay. Motorists across the country face toll price rises in the new year. This includes an extra €1 on one of the busiest roads in Ireland. Transport Infrastructure Ireland yesterday unveiled a sweeping range of hikes on tolls that will kick in from January 1st. The toll fees will climb on 10 roads around the country, with the majority of journeys seeing a 10% rise. For example, the price of a car travelling on the M50 will rise from £2.50 to £2.60. The 8 public-private tolls around Ireland will also rise by 10%. So what is the story like? At what point in these public-private partnerships have the private companies made enough money that we can look after the roads ourselves and decide these things ourselves? Like, I thought public-private partnership allows major infrastructural development, but there does not come a point where that the private companies made their cash and now the state sort of takes most of the money. Or maybe that's the case, but it seems to be a fantastic deal if you have the money to begin with, because you continue to rake it in perpetuity, would seem. And what's the justification for the increase in prices, one must ask. Right, now, some of your comments coming into us, some from yesterday, some from today. We were talking about, we were talking to Seanie O'Beale. He's one of the farmers, Farming with Nature ambassadors, and he's made changes to his farming practices, not least to protect the corncrake. But this caller says, if there is a corncrake on your land, then you won't get planning permission. This is a huge issue around the northwest coast. Doesn't feel right, does it? But anyway, we were also chatting about health, of course, and the trust in health. And this was the relatively low level, the 55,000 people that have opted out of sort of not compulsory, but presumed organ donation. This caller presumably did so because they don't trust the medical profession. Another one thing I find concerning and what's going on every day is you look at the phone or it's a scam, different foods being recalled. Yeah. There's a lot of that, but I mean, there is so much stuff on the market proportionately. I suppose maybe it's a relatively small amount. Good morning, Greg. In relation to the hate speech issue being brought up again by some groups, the real issue is why Roderick O'Gorman sent out tweets in 7 languages in the Far East, inviting people back for free housing behind our backs. Then the Irish government done the exact same with the asylum pact. Both should have went to a referendum, as we all know. We've an opt-out clause. We've a severe shortage of housing and hospital beds, and no Gardaí vetting resulted in criminals entering the country. Look what happened in Dublin last week, where he was allowed in and not deported. That's the real issue. Nothing to do with hate speech. I must actually get the exact quote from that Roderick O'Gorman tweet, the actual phraseology of it. Listen, a lot of what you're saying, a lot of people agree with, and broadly speaking, much of it is true. In factually true, not the opinion side. That's up to people to have their own opinions. We were talking about Halloween and just being careful when you're out and about, or if the kids were out trick-or-treating. Wrap the kids up in tinfoil so they're like the Jetsons, the family of the future. That way, a high-vis won't ruin the ensemble. Yeah, okay. And tomorrow night, I think it's looking reasonably favourable, or tomorrow evening, for people out trick-or-treating. And the Gardaí had warned people just to be extra careful if you're out on the roads, because there could be children and family out doing a bit of trick-or-treating. Although, as I said, on Tuesday, you just don't seem to see it as much as you did. So just keep an extra eye out. The last thing any of us want is a death or serious injury on our conscience. On to the roads. Hi, Greg. The big wind nearly 3 weeks over now, and there are trees and branches laying all over the road, and one with wires hanging down as well. I'm sure you see them coming down Lurgy Brack and the hard shoulder at Manor Roundabout. Is it going to be cleaned up? Good question. I presume it's the council. They probably have a lot to do. But have you reported it to the council as well? I think sometimes we need to ensure that we're not presuming someone else is reporting this stuff, and that we are doing it ourselves as well. And that means that we've the best hope of them coming out and having a look at it. Only 1% of tobacco law breaches in Ireland led to convictions, a new study has shown. The findings highlight the gap between Ireland's reputation as a pioneer in tobacco control and the day-to-day reality of legal enforcement. Dr. Frank Houghton is a social sciences lecturer at the Technological University of Shannon and author of Perspectives in Public Health Study. Good morning, Doctor. Thank you for your time.
Good morning. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that these are current sort of breaches of the rules and regs. Are they? What kind of breaches are we talking about?
Yeah, well, this is analysis pretty much over sort of 10 years of data that we got hold of. So this, I think, goes 2014 to 2023. And I suppose there are five or six different types of breaches, but the main two, the big two, what you might call, you know, the underage test purchases, where the HSC, Environmental Health Services, might send someone in who is actually underage to see can they buy cigarettes. And the other big one would be the, you know, smoking inside, or the conformity of the shelters that people are supposed to smoke in outside, so there's more, you know, air circulation.
And there have been thousands upon thousands of breaches.
It's quite scary. Yep, I think the figure, at least from sort of 2014 to 2023, is almost 23,840 breaches, and then it you know, percolates down into a mere 267 convictions, which I must confess I feel is rather pitiful.
Is there any enforcement? I mean, obviously there's a level of enforcement, but is it the case that they think there's enough enforcement to have enough, or as far as they might be satisfied, compliance with the law?
From my perspective, as a sort of tobacco control advocate, definitely not. Mm. The compliance rate is about 80%. And personally, I think in any of these things where we're looking at compliance, you should be looking for at least 90%. And part of the worry is twofold. One is that 80%, it's pretty much been 80% since the beginning of this data. So from 2014 all the way through, you know, to 2023, it's practically hovered around 80%. We're not really seeing any improvement, which to me indicates that a little more action is necessary. And the other thing, of course, is a lot of these breaches, as I said, are to do with underage or test purchases. Mm. We know that most people who start to smoke tend to start smoking early. We know the earlier you smoke, the more likely you are to become addicted. And I don't know if people realize this, but tobacco-related illnesses kill 8 million people globally a year. In Ireland, the HSE put the figure at about 4,500. Irish Heart Foundation puts the figure at about 6,000. But, I mean, whichever of them is correct, that's an awful lot of people.
Yeah, I think really maybe we are riding the wave of this reputation as being a world leader or a trailblazer in this area. But if you call to pull the curtain back a little bit and have a peep, it's not really, you know, that's not really being backed up.
No, we're good at passing legislation. We're not so good at enforcing it, unfortunately. I would just say this, and one thing that isn't in the paper, and I was delighted to get the call from Highland Radio, guess what county is actually doing best on this?
Go on.
It's Donegal. Okay. 25% of all of those convictions are from one county, Donegal. And, you know, from my perspective, this is fabulous. There's obviously someone up there who is taking, or a group of people who are taking this seriously.
And who would be responsible for the enforcement in this area then? Is it public health officials in conjunction with the Gardaí?
Well, that's what I thought initially, before I sort of investigated it. But it's the Environmental Health Services, so it is. It's HSE Environmental Health Services. But they don't apparently then go to sort of the Gardaí or, you know, state prosecution. They bring it to the courts themselves.
Okay.
Just sort of, you know, the local court. So it's interesting, the counties which are next best are Cavan and Monaghan.
Yeah,
so
thinking
some people are taking this seriously.
To be honest with you, I was going to ask you how do other border counties do, because I just wonder with different rules and regs within a stone's throw of each other, etc., and maybe a stronger focus in this area in border counties, it's starting to make a little bit more sense to me as to why we are doing what we're doing. But that doesn't answer the question. I don't know why, but I'm not surprised it's border counties.
Okay, yeah, because I mean, for some other counties, if you take the likes of Leash and Kildare, have had sort of one conviction in 10 years. Mm. You know, as I said, we've got a total of almost 24,000 breaches. And they've managed one each, which is.
I also think a concern that I would have as well. I believe there is a natural epidemic of young people vaping, and you know, I think it's far greater amount of teens and young teens and older teens that are vaping that have never ever smoked before. And there are legislation that's in now and more legislation coming down the line and increased costs and all this type of stuff. I just wonder if we can't enforce the tobacco laws in this space, how are we going to police, you know, the vaping, the vaping rules and regulations?
Absolutely, and I have the same concern. You're quite right. We have this new bill, what's it called, the Public Health Tobacco Products and Nicotine Inhaling Act. And you know, again, the penalties have gone up. But my worry is, if this analysis is anything to go by, it won't be enforced, or it'll have absolutely minimal enforcement.
That is a concern, because we don't. I'm starting to hear from people who work in certain areas of health saying they are starting to see on the tables effectively the impact of vaping, and the data that we constantly sort of say, well, we don't have, is starting to trickle through now, and it doesn't read very good.
No. And again, I mean, we saw this. I mean, cigarettes really sort of became a massive thing, sort of World War One and post-World War One. They were given free to the troops, but we didn't see the impact of that for some considerable time. And the worry is, of course, that we're going to see the same with vaping. I mean, the industries have been very smart. They've sold these vapes as a way, ostensibly, of you know, moving people off more harmful cigarettes onto vapes. But the reality is, I think, that they're just becoming an access route for young people into smoking. I mean, some of the flavors available, you know, the bubble gum and the real child-centered, child-oriented flavors, to me, clearly scream, you know, that this is child focused.
So really, it's going to be a lot to ask to expect the current penalties for breaches to be enforced at a level that might increase compliance from above that 80%. So is it a case of introducing, you know, short, sharp shocks, or like even perhaps short. But you know what I mean? I think you or your researchers have some proposals as to how compliance could be increased.
Yeah, no, I think it can be done relatively easily. And part of my worry is the Environmental Health Office actually did 100, nationally, over the time period we're looking at, did 127,000 visits. And as they say, they found almost 24,000 breaches. If these were handled with a sort of an automatic, they call them fixed penalty notices. If you think of like the speeding ticket, if that was just done automatically, then I think compliance rates would rocket. I mean, none of us like getting a speeding ticket. I think businesses would be in exactly the same position. I think they would tighten their act up very, very quickly.
Interesting stuff.
I think that's the crucial answer.
All right, Dr. Frank Houghton, thank you very much indeed. He's a social science lecturer at Technological University of the Technology University of Shannon, an author of Perspectives in Public Health Study. So environmental health officials found 23,800 breaches of tobacco laws between 2014 and 2023, but there were just 267 convictions, a rate of 1.12. And in terms of the detections, you heard from Dr. Houghton there, and it's not actually contained within the port, one quarter of them were in County Donegal, and other counties that had high rates were Cavan and Monaghan. So as I was listening intently to Frank there, I was trying to figure out in my mind why our proximity to the border might lead to higher conviction rates. I've still got some thinking to do in relation to that, but there's always a reason, isn't there? All right, stay where you are. Someone contacted us to ask, is the Halloween festival in Derry cancelled this weekend due to the weather warnings? And we got on to the organisers, Derry City and Strabane District Council, and the response is as follows. In relation to Awakening the Walled City Trail, due to forecasted strong winds and heavy rain, Thursday night's Awakening the Walled City Trail has been cancelled for safety reasons. That's just tonight, has been cancelled for safety reasons, but if you still want your Halloween fix, indoor events in the Guildhall and other venues will continue as planned on Thursday, including a live music gig with local band Ports at 9:30 p.m. So, just to recap, Thursday night's Awakening the Walled City Trail has been cancelled for safety reasons. Coming up shortly, we're going to be talking about pocket money and what the right thing to do is, how much to give, whether they should be given it at all, what they should have to do to receive that money. And I suppose really, you know, it's as much about, I suppose, maybe rewarding good behaviour, but also I think it's good to develop an understanding of money. So if you have any questions in relation to pocket money, etc., when a child should receive it, how much they should receive it, etc., give us a call on 086 60 25000. But we've employed the services of Maria Rush, writer and parenting writer of parenting blog S Mum, to discuss this. How are you getting on, Maria? How are you keeping? You can't hear me, can you not? Okay.
I can now. That was good timing. There we go.
Right,
my earbuds were connected to the phone and I could hear it ringing. But anyway, how are we all?
We're good. Yeah. Reading this week, a majority of people say that children should start receiving pocket money from the age of 9, but others reckon this is too early. Now, I suppose we have to sort of preface this by saying everyone's situation is different, right? But I think a lot of us want to know what others are doing and have some guidance and sort of figure out what the right or wrong thing to do is. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I would agree with what you just said. Like everything to do with parenting, it is what is going on within your four walls, I think, is the most important thing to think about. By all means, there are people who will say that, you know, you have to be giving children pocket money. You have to be giving them financial independence. You have to be teaching them these things. And then there's other people who will just say, well, I don't have that extra few euros a week to give to the kids. And that's fine. There's pros and cons for everything. I think if you're giving children pocket money for a reason, it can, again, it can go two ways. Some people give it to them as a payment for chores around the house or for, you know, for doing a list of jobs that they have to do every week. And that's teaching them responsibility and it's teaching them that you have to earn the pocket money. But then on the other side of that, if we're holding it back from them as a punishment, I don't know how that works then. What are you teaching them then? Mm. You know, so it's finding a balance within, I suppose, within your own home. Why are the children getting pocket money? How much are they getting? How often do they get it? Is it realistic? And are you then teaching them what they need from it? So handing them money and teaching them are two different things. So, you know, if I was to give my girls a certain amount of money every week and not pay any attention then to what they were doing with it or how they were viewing it, I'm not really giving them anything other than a little account balance that they really don't value. And I'm speaking here from, I'm a mummy of a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old, and they genuinely are still learning about value. And there's ways we can do that. So my two don't get pocket money every week. Sometimes I simply just don't have it to give them, but I'll have no bother telling them that. And I think that's the crux of it, Greg. If you, within your own home, have a very open relationship with the children about money and the value of money, and that they don't just see it as something that comes every week without question, you know, it's going to give them much more.
Yeah, I think personally, and I saw this in my older two boys, the only time the penny really drops with younger people and money is when you're actually taking it off them. I don't think it is when you're giving it to them. And, you know, if they start a summer job or something and you take, I mean, it can be a nominal amount or whatever, housekeeping, for an example, or however you want to phrase it. You know, I think there's so much more learned in that process than there is in giving money, because all of a sudden you realize that, you know, whatever you receive, sometimes you have to pay out and there's no real tangible benefit to it. Like, I really enjoyed, you know, seeing the eldest get his wages and then realizing rent has to come from that. Oh, you have to pay for broadband. You have to buy food. And where's the money for socializing and stuff? And I thought that was, or found that, because I never really, in an organized way, gave the boys pocket money. I can talk as to how that worked. But the lesson was learned taking money off them. And I wonder if the question is not about when you give pocket money, but it's when you start drawing down off them. So if they get a summer job, right, and they're working Saturday and Sunday and they're getting, say, 110 euro or something, you know, they'll learn far more from you taking 15 quid off them in the first week of them working, I think, than they would in the previous 7 years of you handing them a tenner a week.
Yeah. And, you know, even going back to much younger than that, I'm sitting here laughing. I had an experience with my oldest girl a few years ago where we were out in the shop and she saw something she wanted. And she had just made, I think, her communion. So she did have a bit of cash, you know, that she could use. So I said, right, you know what, if you want that today, I think we were in Belfast. So I said, I'll get that for you and you can pay me back when we get home. And when we came home and I went to her bank, little thing, and I took the money and said, right, count out now the 40 euros and give it to me. Oh my God, Greg, when I say Vesuvius went off, because it was suddenly the value of what was in front of her. I do think that's where we have a bit of a problem with the whole idea of bank accounts and online. So Revolut, for example, is fantastic. I use it with the Gerdas. They both have their little vault. So if their aunties or uncles send them money for birthdays or whatever, they have that and they know that. But they don't see the value in it because it's just a number on a screen. So I'm finding with them that if they have, say, 15 euros in this vault, they don't see what that means until they're standing in a shop and something that they want is 16 euro and they can't have it. So what I tend to do with the two Gerdas is I'll actually take the money and give it to them in cash. Mm. We'll go maybe into pennies and I'll give them a fiver or a tenner each and say, right, go and get what you want. And there's times we'll go to the till and it's cruel. Perhaps people will say it's cruel. I will let them go to the till with 12 euros worth of stuff in their hands because they haven't been adding it up as they've been going. And then the cashier will say, you don't have enough for that. And yes, it's hard. And as a mommy, I just want to hand the money and say, yeah, take it. But I will make them leave it back and say, well, okay, I'll not take that today. But you always say, well, look, you can come back in for that, you know, another time. That for me is how, like, I don't give pocket money regularly. But the girls know that we pay for everything.
You know, that's it. So in our situation, it seems we're somewhat similar. never give the boys pocket money, but if they were well behaved and they looked for something and could make a reasonable argument for it and I could afford it, they would get it. Like, I thought, why would I pay a child to clean their own room or to put their own washing in a washing machine or even to tidy around the kitchen? Why would I say that you would have to do that financially? What kind of message would that be sending to them when they have their own place? Is it like, well, you know, do I pay someone to clean? Which is fine if they want to do that or whatever. So whilst you're trying to put a value on money by saying do household chores, you're living in that house for nothing. You know, why should you be financially rewarded for doing that? This was my attitude. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. But that being said, they were good lads. And if they needed something and they structured it the right way, they would have got it if I could afford it. But why would people rewarding people for bringing in the turf? You're sitting warming your fat ass in front of the turf. Get your turf yourself.
Again, it's going to depend on your own home. It's also going to depend on your children and how they respond to things. For I agree completely with you from my own personal point of view. My girls don't get pocket money for doing household chores because they live in the house. We live together. It is not mommy's job to do everything. It is not daddy's job to do everything. If you want to unload the dishwasher, thank you. That makes living together much easier. And they have things that they do, like there's certain cleaning, there's certain chores in the house. It's just part of our life and they have to do it. And if they don't do it, they're going to get in trouble with it. But I'm not going to say, right, you've unloaded the dishwasher, there's 2 euro, well done, because that's something that is part of life. However, if I'm out washing the windows in the front of the house and they say, look, can I come out and help you? Absolutely, I'm going to reward that.
Again, that kind of stuff, yeah. I do recall one of the lads, you know, sweeping or power hosing or whatever, and I actually felt, right, that's a good thing. It's like that's payment work for that. It's in excess of you know, sort of the cleaning up after yourself.
But, you know, is it, as well as that, I think it's important that they know that when you live in a home, you know, there are things, there are age-appropriate jobs that children can do. And for me as a mummy, I suppose I've grown up, I'm the eldest of six, I grew up on a farm. I'm saying my mum's probably listening to this laughing, thinking I was doing things that were far above age-appropriate from the point of view of changing nappies and looking after kids and cooking at the age of 10. But, you know, it's what you teach the kids as being normal daily life within a home and then chores. Like one of the girls was over recently in mum's and she was out gardening and planting loads of little shrubs and stuff. She went out and helped her and mummy gave her, I think, a fiver then before she went to town the following day. But, you know, the Revolut thing's great. Possibly people would think I'm a bit cruel. My oldest girl got her first phone just last year. She was in first year. And the phone is attached to her Revolut account and it comes out of her account every month. And again, I have let it happen in the last few months where I can see that she doesn't have enough money for that on Monday. And I've let it go rather than throwing the fiver in to cover it. So she got the email saying, you don't have enough funds in your account. Yeah. And it was a very innocent thing where she had gone to school, forgotten her lunch, bought herself lunch, but not considered how much was left. So look, I suppose the teacher in me always comes back to what are we teaching them with the things that we do at home. are we teaching our children when we bring them up that they don't understand that money is hard to come by, that you have to work for it, that parents do face financial difficulties, especially at the moment? When do your children need to become aware of that? You know, is that something, I would have no issue, for example, in saying to the girls, look, we're not going to do that this weekend because I can't afford it or I don't have the money for it. And sometimes you see the panic of, no, I'm just making a decision because we have other bills to pay. And, you know, you're teaching them financial literacy. You're teaching them.
But you see, the thing is this, it'll hit them like a wrecking ball at some point, right? It's how you prepare them for it, because it's a part of, unless you're a millionaire, it's a part of life that's inevitable. You mentioned phones there. I was contacted by a few parents wondering what to do. And I mean, obviously, I can't advise them. There's a few schools sending out the contracts, these contracts in sixth year, I think it's fifth, sixth year, sort of saying that they will sign the contracts to commit to not getting a mobile phone until they get into first year. Have you come across that? What's your feelings on that? Because it's causing kind of a bit of an issue for me at that age, again, sorry, and I don't want to sound preachy, that's why I'm referencing my situation. The phone was useful for me to check on people, organising lifts, bish, bash, bosh. Was it in sixth class? Probably not, actually, now that I reflect. But anyway, if you have any views on these contracts and I say contract in inverted commas, asking parents and kids to commit to not getting a mobile device until first year?
I think if we could get them to not have mobile devices until they're 17 or 18, it'd be great. But again, you see, there's two sides to it. There absolutely is a need for us to know where our children are. And I get that. I understand, especially if you're living in the town and the kids are maybe going to football practice and then getting a lift home with someone's mum or a lift home with someone's dad, or you're trying to pick them up. Yes, communication is important. But for me at that age, they were always with an adult or was always with the school. So I didn't feel, I was one of those people who said, I didn't give her the phone until she was in first year. And she was probably one of the last to get it, and I don't regret it at all. Sometimes I wish I could take it and throw it into the fully, to be honest. But, you know, we do monitor it.
That's an interesting one, because what you say there, because it's kind of the same as the pocket money. And I know on the face of it, whilst you might say that, and I know to some extent it's tongue-in-cheek, Maria, and I'm not talking about your or my kids, but broaden it out a little bit. At the end of the day, when they do hit 17 or 18, this whole world of social media, negativity, it's all going to be there, right? So is it like the financial thing? Should we be preparing them rather than this wrecking ball of social media and commentary and everything else that comes? It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I'm old enough to remember mobile phones being invented. Okay, and but these people have been born into swiping touch screens and whatever, right? So we can't pretend it's not going to be an everyday part of their life now.
You see, there's the difference in the reasons we use phones. You've got your phone for communicating and your phone for social media. There's a huge movement in the UK at the minute where a lot of teenagers' parents are buying them phones without social media access. The Nokia brick phone that we all had back in the early 90s.
There's no function.
I know. And I mean, to be honest, I do see with my older girl, I'm quite impressed with how she's dealing with the whole social media thing, because she was at an age that by the time she got it, she was able to understand and read it a little bit better. And everything's literacy, everything's reading. You're reading social media, you're reading posts, you're reading images. You know, I'm not against children having phones at a certain point. You know your own child.
First year feels good for me.
And I will be sticking to my guns from that point of view with my youngest girl. Now, you've brought up something else that I had a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday. And I don't think she'll mind me speaking about this. She had to put her little dog to the Rainbow Bridge there at the start of the week. It was all very upsetting. The dog wasn't well. And in the 2 days since her doggy has passed away, she actually sent me screenshots. I'll send them on to you, Greg. Of the algorithm, what it has been showing her since. And I'm talking images of dogs with advertisements of dogs that are identical to hers, talking about, oh my goodness, all these things are coming at her on her phone. And she just posted it on her own private, she has a very private social, she doesn't have it open. But she posted it saying, and she's a professional marketer, she said, if this is what I am seeing as an adult who knows how to read media, what are our children seeing based on what they're watching? And the idea is that you're not making them aware of the world around them if you're not watching what they're watching, because they are being, it's curated almost what they're seeing. And we once they have a device in their hands, we're not in charge anymore of the vision of the world that's been presented.
No, because and just to put a bit more meat on that bone, if you don't mind me saying, say for instance, a 14-year-old was feeling down, and they searched on their browser on their phone Pieta House or Jigsaw. Unfortunately, those cookies go to TikTok, and then TikTok will start curating a For You page that will focus on perhaps unhelpful advice to deal with emotional issues. Not very obvious stuff like advertising those services, but influencers that claim to be in that space, etc. And that's exactly what that's what would happen to a younger person. The same has happened to your friend there with the sad passing of their pet. All right, Maria, listen, I would love to keep going on this, to be honest with you. I suppose that's why you have a blog, because you can. But unfortunately, the 10 o'clock news is bearing down my neck. Thanks so much.
Sure, nobody wants to listen to the news these days.
listen for 3 hours, listen from 9 to 12, get all the stuff right,
of course.
And then switch off for the rest of the day. That's my, of the radio, but of the news. All right, Maria, thanks so much.
I'll just finish with... do what suits you. That's all I can say.
Yeah, exactly. there ain't no rules. Exactly. And there are people's different situations that the child. The point is, it's not to be judging. The point of that conversation really is to give us some collective guidance as to what works. But the what works is best for what works for your children and your family. And we're in a no judge zone. But sometimes, you know, parents are like, well, what should I do? What's the right thing to do? Because there's no rule book for parenting.